Good morning and welcome along to Tip Today. If you're setting out on a journey today, do be very, very careful indeed, because lots and lots of flooding out there, lots and lots of potholes. I was driving last night from Kilross into Tipperary town. It is appalling. I mean appalling. I came across an elderly gentleman who had a tyre wrecked, absolutely wrecked on those potholes. So look, if you're driving, just look after yourselves. And can I put it to the powers that be out there? Can you do something about the dreadful situation with potholes out there? It's costing us a fortune. And, you know, it's possible it will cost us a life very soon as well. So do something about it. Sort it out, please. Coming up on the show today, the shocking discovery of yet another dead horse. We speak with a young woman who suffered near total heart failure. A listening cafe is being set up in Ross Grey. Singing star Niamh Lynn comes to Brew Baroo, and the Jake and Sean Paul show needs your help. Judy is by the phones with that free phone number, 1800 938 007. It won't cost you a cent, and you can text on 083-311-3311. You can email tiptoday at tipfm.com. Now, Revive Active, Ireland's leading super supplement company, is among those taking part in the Tip FM Health and Wellbeing Expo this Sunday in the Clonmel Park Hotel from 10 to 5pm. And ahead of it, we're giving away a daily prize of 1 month's supply of Revive Active Superfood Supplement. And all you have to do is text us with your thoughts and your comments. So by interacting with us by text, it gets you into the competition. But do give us a full name and an address so that we can enter you properly into that draw. All right. So it's 083-311-3311. Having a look at the headlines today, the housing minister is going to announce a new affordable mortgage scheme later on. It should help people buy their first home with lower interest rates than they'd get in the main banks. The cleanup will continue today after a day of spot flooding here in Tipperary and around the country. Persistent heavy rain overnight Saturday saw a number of areas in the Premier hit by spot flooding yesterday. And former Garda Commissioner Noreen O'Sullivan is due to appear before the Disclosures Tribunal today. It was set up, as you know, to examine the treatment of Garda whistleblower Maurice McCabe, who exposed fears that senior members of the force were quashing penalty points for well-known personalities. 1800 938 007. Now, an investigation is underway after the carcass of another horse was found in Tipperary. The remains of the young animal were discovered on council land in Glenconner, Clonmel, which has been earmarked for housing. Now, the grim find on Friday came a day after senior officials in Tipperary County Council said lessons had been learned in relation to the incidents that happened at Loughty before Christmas. Now, earlier on this morning, I spoke to Sean Keating, who is Director of Services with responsibility for the environment and change management. Sean, last week the Tipperary County Council said lessons had been learned following the incidents of animal cruelty in the Clonmel area, and then the day after we have this incident in Glenconner.
Yes, I must say, Fran, very unfortunate. We had decided that as a result of what had happened in Knocklofty and in some other areas around Clonmel, that we would begin a check of all of the lands owned by Tipperary County Council to ensure that we didn't have problems with illegally placed horses on our own sites. Now, we had done some inspections, particularly in the Clonmel area, just before the new year. And at that time, we had found horses in a number of places, but they were generally in good condition. And a number of these had also been checked by the Department of Agriculture inspector for Tipperary. But unfortunately, in this one particular location at Glenconner, a young foal that would have been probably less than 6 months was found dead on Thursday last. And we had to take action immediately. So we arranged for the foal to be removed, obviously, and that foal was with some other horses, some other equines, because there was a donkey involved also. And we arranged to have those picked up, and those have now been taken to the private pound that we have a contract with.
One of the residents of the Glenconner Heights area said, "I watched the horse dying all day Thursday in the snow. I phoned all of the authorities and animal groups. I looked out this morning and the poor animal was dead." That's a very upset resident. What about that? What about people being able to get in touch with the local authority when there's an incident like this, Sean?
Well, one of the things that we very much clarified were the responsibilities of the various state agencies. Now, firstly, I would say that the responsibility for the welfare of horses obviously lies with the people who own the horses or those who are their keepers at the time. Secondly, if they're not carrying out their proper responsibilities, then when it comes to animal welfare, the Department of Agriculture are the ones who look at that. Where the councils get involved is when horses have become effectively strays. In other words, when they're liable to cause nuisance or danger in a public place or on a public road. But however, we will get involved once we're advised of any incidents of that nature by passing on the word to the Department of Agriculture and on occasion getting our own vets to call to those locations. So, now, I can't answer for immediately what happened with regard to a call of that nature on Thursday. And had our people gone there, obviously we would have tried to do something immediately. But by the time our people got to the site, that poor foal had already passed away.
What is your advice to people out there when they see something like this, or when they realise that an animal is in bad condition? Who should they call? Because there seems to be confusion out there about it, Sean.
Well, that, again, maybe it's useful to clarify that. When there is any issue to do with animal welfare, particularly when it's on private land, then the people to call are the Department of Agriculture. We're putting their numbers on our website as a result of interagency meetings that we've had since the events in Knocklofty. And they have daytime hours on which they can be contacted, the same as the council has with regard to stray horses. And those numbers, as I say, are available on our website. In terms of out of hours, the arrangement is that people contact the local Garda station, and then they will make the necessary arrangements either to have horses picked up if they're in the stray category, or to get word to the Department of Agriculture if it's an issue of animal welfare.
These horses in the Glenconner area, what about ownership, Sean? Any ideas on that?
Because these horses generally are not chipped or with passports, we can't say for certain who owns them, but they do appear to be people who have horses but who don't have land. And that's why they tend to be either on council land illegally, or they're on farmers' lands without their permission, or they're on a public area by the side of the road. But at this time of the year, the problem is not even so much getting access to grass because of the poor weather conditions. It's ensuring that whoever owns these horses are actually bringing them fodder, bringing them hay and nuts to feed them. And that tends to be what's happening, that people are not looking after their horses. And in those circumstances, as I say, the Department of Agriculture will get involved in the welfare side of it. And if they become strays, or if they're on our property, we will have to get involved in terms of having them removed.
And speaking of that removal, the horses and the donkey that came from the same field, where are they now? Where were they taken?
They're taken directly to the pound in Cork, which is owned by the contractors that we use for seizing of horses. They will remain there for a minimum of 5 days, during which the people who own them will have the opportunity to try to reclaim them. But they will only be given back the horses if they provide a passport, prove ownership, and show that they've got land on which they can keep those horses, and if the veterinary people at the pound are satisfied that they are in a position to look after the welfare of those horses. If those conditions are not met, or if nobody comes up to claim them, then the horses will be sent to a horse sanctuary, as is what happened with the horses from Knocklofty before Christmas.
And as we learned from that experience in Knocklofty, it's very expensive to get these animals to the pound. Who picks up the tab on that?
Initially, the council picks up the tab, and then there is a proportion of that money that is recouped by us from the Department of Agriculture. The remainder then comes from the council budget.
What happens for the future then, Sean? Because you spoke about learning from the Knocklofty incident, and now we have this one as well. Will you have more inspections of local authority properties, or how will that work?
Well, those inspections are ongoing, and what we've decided at the moment is that if we find any horses that are in poor condition, we will immediately seize them. If we find horses that seem to be well cared for, then we will investigate as to who the owners are and make arrangements to have them moved from council land. And we will also be informing the Department of Agriculture with regard to any potential welfare issues. And that's the approach we intend to take. Now, the danger at the moment, of course, is that the weather is so poor that if animals are not being properly fed, there is a danger that the welfare condition could deteriorate quite quickly. So this is why we have to work very closely with the Department of Agriculture in trying to find solutions for these cases.
Sean Keating, thank you for speaking to us this morning. That's Sean Keating there, and Sean is Director of Services with Responsibility for the Environment and for Change Management as well. Now, it seems to, just to sum that up, if you do see a horse or horses in distress, or if you do see incidents of this kind, it appears to be the Gardaí is your first port of call, really, and they will sort it from there. So you call the Gardaí, basically, and a lot of people were under the impression you call the local authority, and I know that where Glenconner is concerned, some people tried to do that, but to no avail. So the best thing is you call the Gardaí, and they will set things in motion. All right, we'll stick with this after the break.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
Welcome back to TIP today. Now, Councillor Pat English is with me online. Good morning to you, Pat.
Morning, Fran. How are you?
I'm very well, Pat. You were called out by residents to the Glenconner area, Pat. Is that correct?
Yeah, I got a call there on Friday at lunch here. Just basically saying there's a dead animal above in Glenconner in council land. So I went up to inspect it, and I met Pat Murphy up there from your own radio station.
Yeah.
So we both went up and had a look. Poor animal was after, he's probably dead a couple of days, that's it.
And, it must have been a heartbreaking scene to see that.
I just break your heart, yeah. It's just a young foal. It would have been a lovely foal, I suppose. But I don't know why it died, but it was after dying. There was three other horses, I don't think two other horses in the field. And they seemed to be well fed, like they weren't stressed or hungry looking, but there was no feed at all on in the field. The grass was gone off the field, so there was nothing there to feed the animals. We could see anyway.
So is it possible that the young foal starved to death?
I couldn't say. It didn't look like the bones were anywhere. You know, right. It wasn't protruding through, like looks like starvation, but it could have been another complication. Just lack of care, like.
There was a lot of difficulty in people getting through to the local authority to get something done about this, Pat. Is that what you were hearing from locals?
I didn't hear that now from the person who rang me. I rang the council straight away, got onto the environmental section, and they got onto the people in Cork to come up straight away to remove the carcass and remove the horses. So, I don't know. I can't answer for who the people, the residents in Glenconner were speaking to in the council, or was it the council they rang, or the guards, or the department, I don't know.
Last Thursday, the local authority said that they had learned from the dreadful events in Knocklofty, where those horses died of starvation. And then, you know, the next day we have this. So yeah. how much learning was done, really, Pat?
Well, I suppose... On the face, it looks like very little, but I know there has been a number of meetings between the various agencies. You had Sean Keaton there on earlier. I know I spoke to Sean Keaton, gave us a rundown last Wednesday at our district council meeting on basically what the approach they're going to have to removing the horses from council land and ensuring the horses are looked after.
Mm. But was that land around Glenconner, was that inspected recently?
I couldn't say. We were told by Sean was that all council land would be inspected if there's any horses in distress, that they'd be removed, and that they'd look for the owners of the horses, and if they couldn't find the owners, they would remove the horses from the council land.
Right, but I'm presuming that those horses and that donkey were on that land for quite some time.
Oh yes, I'd say for years. Yeah, years.
Right, so it's local authority land, so it was widely known that the horses were on the land. So why wasn't something done?
Well, that's it. The policies weren't being enforced, but we got assurances from Sean that they would be enforced. And I presume we'd just give them time to do it, is the thing. As there's horses on council land, on private land, on NAMA land around this town and other towns around the county.
So what happens now?
It is a big problem, it is going to take that interagency approach.
And it appears to be an expensive problem as well, because...
It's about €600 per horse to move a horse from down to the pound.
Right, to get them impounded costs that much money.
No, I think we can recoup half that from the Department of Agriculture.
Right, okay.
But the cost of the council.
But the initial cost has to be paid from the local...
Has to be paid by the council, yeah.
All right.
There's no problem there. That can be done.
Do you think there's going to be more inspections of the land, even though most of this is widely known anyway?
Oh, there is going to be inspections of the land. First of all, there's going to be inspections of the horses on the land to make sure that they're being fed and looked after. If they're not, they'll be removed to the pound. And we'll try and track down the owners. One of the biggest problems is these horses haven't shipped, and an awful lot of them haven't got their passports.
Right.
So it's down to enforcement between the agency, and that's what we were told by Sean Keaton, our director, basically that the agency have got together and that they are going to enforce it.
If somebody puts horses on local authority land, is that illegal?
It is illegal.
It is illegal, okay.
If anyone puts animals on anyone else's land, it's illegal.
Right.
They have permission.
So I presume the Gardaí have a role in this as well?
Oh, they have, yes.
Right, but the difficulty is discovering who owns the horses.
Who actually owns them, like no one will come forward. Because the value of these horses is after dwindling. So that's the sad thing.
Right.
People just walk away from the horses, basically.
Yeah, my understanding of that area of Glenconner is that there's going to be house building there. Is that?
Yeah, right? That's the new scheme of houses that we'll be starting there next year on that site. Oh. 27 houses there.
All right, Pat, thanks for talking to us today. Thank you and good morning to you. That's Councillor Pat English there, who went to the scene, dreadful scene seemingly, in the Glenconner area of Clonmel to discover that foal dead in the field and the other horses and the donkey removed from there as well. Now, I'm joined on the line by Anne Williamson of Capanagaran Horse Rescue, but also part of Action for Animal Welfare Ireland. Good morning to you, Anne.
Good morning, Fran. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Anne, you sent us an email because you wanted to clarify about rehoming horses abroad, and you wanted to make a point that you certainly don't make money out of this.
Well, certainly don't make money out of it. We have a small rehoming fee for horses, about 200 to 350 is usually it to rehome a horse. And out of that, I have to pay microchipping, passporting, betting, and trimming, for the shoes and things like that for the feet. So I make absolutely nothing out of what I do. In fact, I'm probably out of pocket most of the time. I'm regularly feeding horses. I was down the field feeding horses yesterday, and I ended up upside down in a field with horses looking down at me in about 6 inches of mud. And that's the usual thing every day because, I have to go feed them. Nobody else wants to feed them, so that's basically it. We made nothing.
You felt a need to qualify this, why? Is it because people are making a point that you're making money out of this? Is that it?
Yeah, well, seemingly somebody rang in or something and said that we're making loads of money transporting horses across to different countries and things like that. And I'd love to know where they got this from, you know what I mean? Because I have sent 3 horses, I think, to Germany, to good homes, had to home check them. I got my 300 rehoming fee.
From who? Where does that money come from, Anne?
Which?
The rehoming fee.
The person who takes the horse.
Okay, so they pay you 200 or 300 euro, is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they have to pay the transport, which would be about 900. So they have to pay a transport across for their horse, so they're getting their horse and they're paying about maybe $1,000 for their horse by the time they're finished. And so maybe that's where he's getting his ideas from. Maybe he thinks the rescue is getting all that money, I don't know.
Right, but you're definitely not getting that money.
No. $200 I charge rehoming fee, which is what any dog rescue would probably get for a dog, same thing.
Mm.
I might have to feed that horse for a year, you know,
right,
to get him back to health.
And how do you come up with these people who want a horse of this kind? How does that work?
How does it work? Well, most of the time we put it up, horses for rehome and on our page. We have to check out the homes and make sure they're safe, because the horse has to stay with that person. And if that horse is no longer needed, it comes back to me again. Just, you know, they adopt it, really. It's an adoption fee.
Right. So the horse may be sent back to you again at some other point, is that it?
Yes, and it has happened. In fact, I've had one back this week, so...
Right, from Germany?
No, not from Germany, no. No, from Ireland, actually. This is from Ireland, this one came back.
All right.
But,
okay. And what,
you know, the possibility of them coming back from Germany, that's quite possible too. And there, I have a big expense to pay if that's... Because I'll have to pay the transport back and I'll have to, you know...
Right.
So...
And besides the rehoming fee then, what are you just depending on the good nature of people in terms of funding?
Exactly. Depending on donations and depending on what I can raise in concerts. I do an awful lot of concerts myself.
Mm.
I have good friends who do concerts for me. I run plays. I do different things that I raise the money myself.
Right.
Usually end up losing money though, you know. I never make a penny, really. Right.
But that's, you're concerned that there's a notion out there in some quarters that you're making a lot of money from this in some way.
Well, do you know something? Whoever rang in and said that we were making money, I would, you know, I would love him to come out with me for a week and see exactly what I do and what I have to do.
Right.
I'd love to see him coming down the fields with me yesterday and feeding those horses. And going to feed other horses and driving around and how much I spend on petrol. And I have had 8 calls in the last 3 or 4 days. I've drove to Turles, I've drove to Templemore, I've drove to Holy Cross, I've drove to Cashel, I've drove to Clonmel. In fact, 2 of my friends went into Glenconnell the other day, to that where that foal was found that you were speaking about earlier on.
Yeah.
And there's another ridiculous case again, people with... on council land. And you know, it's only 6 months ago since there was a mare and foal taken out of that place, I do believe, that was absolutely starved with the hunger.
So you know, there was an awareness that that was a place where horses were being put, is that what you're saying?
Well,
to
I'm sure the people at Clonmel will tell you there was an awareness about it, and there's a lot of people in Clonmel know that. And we had 2 people go in there was it Saturday or Sunday to check it out, and within minutes, they were surrounded, like, so...
How do you mean they were surrounded?
Well, there was people all around them, asking them what they were doing there, and, you know, that somebody had put this dead horse in their field, and that was their field, and what were they doing there, and, you know, it's kind of gone beyond a joke now at this stage. I mean, I thought the field belonged to the county council. So,
well, it does belong to the county council.
Yeah, well...
And what are you saying, that there was a group of people there claiming ownership of the field and saying that the dead horse was planted there in some way, is that
yes.
it?
Yes, yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's what I was told. But you mean, that's what you're faced with. I mean, you take horses, you bring them back to life, you know, and then somebody will ring in and say, oh, they're making a fortune.
And your friends, were they trying to rescue those animals in some way?
No, they were going in to check the other horses to see if they were okay. To see if they were okay and see if they needed any hay or whatever. Because people kept ringing. People kept ringing and saying nobody was helping them and that they were ringing. And so it was down to us in the end to go in. Now, whether or not they did ring anybody, I can't say. You know,
were you happy with, I'm not sure if you heard my chat with Sean Keating, were you happy with the notion that you need to ring the Gardaí if you spot something like this, as opposed to the local
authority?
Well,
you see, it's no good ringing them, because I think you need to actually go in and make a statement, because otherwise it's not going to mean anything, you know. I mean,
But like, if you see an animal dying in a field, you need emergency response.
Yes, you need somebody out there straight away. Get somebody out there straight away and insist on somebody coming out there. Because you ring somebody up and they say, oh yeah, we'll pass it on to somebody else and we'll pass it on. You need to get it logged. You need to get, you know, because that's what's happening the whole time. And then people are saying, well, I rang the guards and nobody did nothing, and I rang this one and nobody did nothing. And it's all hearsay. It's all coming back and you don't know whether it's actually after happening or, you know, I think you need to, there needs to be some kind of a group out there that you can go to. There needs to be some
kind of an
authority.
Shop.
Yeah. Because obviously the authorities that are there at the moment are not working.
But seemingly the buck stops with the Department of Agriculture.
Yes, the Department of Agriculture are not enforcing the law. And the county council and the guards can't find out who owns these horses because there's no microchips in them.
Mm.
Well, some of them have microchips in them, but they're not registered.
But you're saying that when your people went to that area of Glen Connor, you were surrounded by people who laid claim to the horses. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
But could the Gardaí not talk to those people then and say, listen, you own them?
I think one of the ladies did report it to the guards.
Right.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Right. Okay. Getting back to the funding again of the rehoming of the horses and that, because I know that that's of concern to you. Just for clarity, Anne, do you make a living out of this with the
no.
rescue? You don't?
I wish.
So what? This is completely voluntary.
Yeah, I love horses. Completely right. voluntary. And that's why I do. Right. I just can't bear to see an animal being...
Right.
And
forgive me for asking you that, but the only reason being for complete clarity, just in case people are texting us in and blah, blah, blah. So you don't make any money from it. You don't make any money from the rehoming.
No, I don't. The rehoming fee basically covers microchip, passport and the vet fees.
All right.
Warming, etc. and all that kind of thing.
All right. And finally, Anne, are we going to come across more of these horrors on local authority land around the county, do you think?
I'm afraid so. There was one down there. It's happening all over. It's all over the place. It happened in Limerick, I think, at the weekend. And I think in Galway there, they did something about it. They brought somebody in and cleaned all the horses out someplace in Galway where there was a lot of horses, a lot of dead horses. So things are starting to happen, thankfully. You know, things are starting to move along. But what gets me is people coming on with negative vibes, you know what I mean? Coming on saying this and saying that. And you know, when we're trying to do something good, you'll always get somebody negative.
Right. When you say negative, you're saying that...
It really hurts, you know. What?
When you say negative, you're saying they think you're making loads of money out of this.
Oh, yeah, or you're making money, or, you know, you're not doing your job, and why aren't you doing this? I mean, we had about, I'd say, 1,200... comments on the Not Lofty thing. You know what I mean?
500
comments. Yes, we put up a GoFundMe to try and do something for those horses. We got 20 people who contributed. 20
right.
out of 1,200. Yet they're all on, why don't you do something? Why is this happening? Why, this is awful. You know, the way, that's what I can't understand. If those 1,200 people had put in €2 each, we could have done an awful lot with it.
Right. You sound very frustrated by it all, Anne.
Oh, completely. Yeah. Completely frustrated. You know, at times I just feel like, oh, God, you know, I don't know. Are we living in a world of zombies or what is happening, you know? It's just ridiculous.
All right, Anne. Well, listen, keep up the good work and don't get too frustrated by it all.
I'll try.
Listen, good to talk to you today, Anne. Thanks very much indeed.
Bye-bye
to you now. That's Anne Williamson there of Capa na Gairean Rescue, but also, of course, part of Action for Animal Welfare. 1800-938-007. You can text on 083-311-3311.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
Now, I'm joined in the studio by my next guest, who had, if she had not indeed taken up the gym 12 months ago, might not be with us today. At the age of just 46, Anne-Marie Channon was in serious heart failure. And we're not talking about any kind of major weight problems, but maybe some stress. And Anne-Marie, as I say, is with me. Anne-Marie, good morning to you.
Morning, Fran. How are you?
I'm very well, but more importantly, how are you? This came as a great shock to you that you were literally in heart failure.
Yeah, it was the biggest shock I ever had, apart from when my daughter passed there 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But it was horrendous, you know, and it's the least thing I expected to happen.
Just to remind people, the last time you spoke to me, you were talking about losing your daughter and, of course, losing your brother as well, and both drug-related, wasn't it? So you've had a considerable amount of stress in your life.
Yeah, it's been pretty enormous now and horrendous, to say the least.
Right.
But, you know, I just thank God that I'm still here today.
And following the death of Amy, you took on her children as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I have her three kids.
Three kids to mind as well.
Yeah.
So stress levels, Anne?
Pretty high most of the time. But, you know, you have to work with what you have and do the best you can with what you have. And, you know, the kids are brilliant. You know, they're great. It's been hard. It's been a long road and probably a long road ahead still. But we're doing great, like, in a lot of ways.
So tell me about the gym then. You started going to... Just come a little closer to the microphone for me, Anne.
I started up the gym. My youngest granddaughter started school there 2 years ago almost. And she was in a little while and I was suddenly back to being on my own at home. And I couldn't handle that. So I was asking friends to go gym with me and go walking. And sure, they were all, oh yeah, we'll do it. But no one did. And I said, one day I just got up off my arse and I went in and done it myself.
Hmm.
I joined up the gym at the swimming pool in Clonmel and I started going a couple of days a week and I built it up over a few weeks and I actually started enjoying it, continued with it because I'd had a lot of weight loss and I wanted to maintain that.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to be healthy and better myself and change my own lifestyle. And I continued with that, but a couple of months in, I felt maybe I was doing too much. I was going literally every day.
Right.
Now, I wasn't overdoing it while I was in there, but I was going home and I was falling asleep at 12 and 1 o'clock in the day, which was not normal. I had never had a problem with my blood pressure, high blood pressure, anything like that. And I've always tried to maintain my weight.
Right, so there was no indicator or anything like that?
No.
And when you were in the gym and when you were putting yourself under aerobic pressure or whatever, did you feel pain? Did you?
I had absolutely no pain then at all to begin with. The first pain I got was December, 12 months back, on the 15th of December, which was actually my birthday, the day I was 46. And I was at home in the evening and I was cleaning up. I was just sweeping the floor and all of a sudden I got a pain. It was like as if someone had thrown something at me. I felt crushed. And I sat down for a few minutes. I felt sick and disorientated. And after a few minutes, the pain subsided and I got up and continued cleaning up the kitchen. And a few minutes after that, it hit me again and I didn't feel good at all. I felt sick and dizzy. My partner called an ambulance to the house. And the ambulance came. I had an ECG done in the ambulance, blood pressure checked, everything was grand. The ECG showed up, it was fine.
Very good.
So, of course, it was my birthday, and I'd be stubborn at the best of times. So, I didn't go to the hospital. I said, I'd be grand. If that says it's not my heart, then it's not my heart. I said, I'll go to my GP for a checkup following this, which I did during the following week. And sure, he treated me for indigestion at that point. But I hadn't had any more pain until after the Christmas. It was a couple of weeks later. And I had been to the hospital on numerous occasions in the following months into the new year.
Mm.
And every time I went up, my bloods were normal. The ECG was normal. And I think they were on the thinking that I was having anxiety and panic attacks.
Right.
And stressed out and everything, you know. But it wasn't. And I knew my heart and soul was something. And then I thought I may have pulled muscles or overdone it in the gym, when in point of fact I knew I hadn't, because I would never overdo it anyway. But it was months later, the pain started coming more regularly. And I got to the point I had the pain every single day of the week. I was getting this pain in my chest. And I was eventually prescribed the GTN spray on the off chance that I may have unstable angina.
That's what you spray under your tongue,
you
is it?
You spray it under your tongue once, yeah. And the minute I first used that, within seconds, the pain subsided. So then they obviously took more attention to the family history. There's a major family history. And I was referred for an angiogram down to Waterford, which I had done on the 28th of August, just gone. And sure, I convinced myself, sure, I'll have this done now. They're probably going to tell me there's nothing wrong.
Mm.
And it is all in my head.
Yeah.
And on the 28th of August, I travelled down to Waterford. I had the angiogram done and the cardiologist, Dr. Solomon, turned around and told me that I shouldn't be there. I shouldn't be here at all, that I was actually 5% away from having a heart attack.
So you should be alive even?
Basically, he said if I hadn't changed my lifestyle by going to the gym and doing myself favours, like changing things, that basically I would have been sitting at home and probably festering over everything that had happened, and that I would have had a massive heart attack. And if I was lucky to have survived it, I would have been going for bypass surgery.
My God.
Luckily enough, though, that day he discovered I had a 90% blockage in the main left artery and 30% in another one.
So what was the procedure then, Anne? What did they do?
They did the procedure that morning. They inserted a stent into my main left artery, and they went in through the main artery in my right arm up into the heart. And obviously you have to be awake during this procedure. Like, it's all on a screen, you're looking at everything. And they inserted the stent, and later that day I was actually transferred from the cardiac unit in Waterford back to Clonmel.
That quickly?
Yeah, because they closed their unit at 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening down there.
Right.
So I was transferred back to the cardiac unit in Clonmel, and I was there, I think, for about 24 hours, and then I was able to go home.
And were you immediately feeling better?
Oh, no. No. No, I suppose it was about 6 to 7 weeks after that of a recovery period.
Yeah.
And obviously I went for checkups and one thing and the other. And shortly after that, then I took up a program I was offered through the hospital from the cardiac unit when I was there.
Will you hang on to that for one sec, because I want to take a break, because I want to hear about that program, Anne-Marie. So just one sec and we'll be right back.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
And you're very welcome back to TIP Today. And Anne-Marie Channon is with me in studio. So you were saying there just before the break, you had the stent in, then a period of recovery. What sort of recovery, and what did you do to help yourself there, Anne-Marie?
Well, my partner was amazing. I had a couple of great friends that supported me unbelievably throughout the whole few months that everything was going on.
Yeah.
My friend Abby was amazing, now taking the kids at last minute, just bang, I'd have to go to the hospital or something like that had happened. And my partner Tony then would take over and he'd stay there and he'd look after them, and everything was brilliant that way. But I suppose I just had to relax. There was a lot I couldn't do, like basic housework for a couple of weeks. I had all the lads helping out, my boys, my partner, my friend, the whole lot, like. And gradually I got my energy levels back up. I suppose it's a matter of just relaxing and getting back to rights. And, like, you would be afraid to do things.
Mm.
It'd be in your head that, like, oh, God, I can't do that.
Yeah,
but
of course.
You'd be afraid of what you can do and can't do. And then you're afraid to overdo it. And every little twinge then you'd be worried. You know, I got very down in myself, to be honest. Because what nobody warned me about was the mental effects, the shock that I went into overall. Yeah,
and tell me about that. What were those mental effects?
Well, for the first number of days after, immediately after, if anyone even looked at me and spoke to me or said that, and I just kept breaking down crying. I got very, very down on myself. I couldn't accept the fact that this had happened. And
On top of everything else that happened to you.
Yeah. And all I could think about was the kids. You know, I've got to be there for the kids. I've got to get better. I've got to do this and I've got to do that. And I was worrying myself more, so I had to back down, relax, and get back up on my feet properly and do it the right way. So I was offered cardiac rehabilitation with Declan Spellman in the hospital above in Clonmel,
mm-hmm.
which I took up, and I did the 7 or 8 weeks with him, 3 mornings a week.
Right. And what did that involve?
We would be having classes for about an hour, hour and a half. We'd have dieticians in, people discussing, the pharmacist coming in discussing our medications.
Yes.
Another woman would come in, we'd discuss food labels and having to learn more and re-educate ourselves basically on everything, food products and what we should and shouldn't be doing. And then of course there was the gym in there, in the cardiac rehab place. And you'd be doing complete circuits of this gym every day while you would have the heart monitors attached with all the wires. So your blood pressure and everything would be monitored from when you go in to when you leave. And then we'd do walking tests at the start and a walking test at the end to see what the level of fitness was when you started and what it was when you finished. And obviously I completed the whole complete class. I didn't miss one class.
Very good.
I knew I needed to do it for myself.
Right. So that was very important to you.
It was most important. the treatment after and looking after the aftercare is seriously important. It's imperative that people should take it up. Mm. A lot of people don't take it up, but most people do.
Right, because you see, the impression that an awful lot of people have is, sure, it's only a stent, it's grand, you'll be back up on your feet in 24 hours, you'll be grand. It's not quite that.
No.
Right.
And Declan Smellman actually explained that to us as well.
Yeah.
There was a lot of explaining done and stuff. Like, as he said, the exact same as what you just did.
Yeah.
But having a bypass and having a stent, there's very little difference between the two. There's not much in the difference of it.
Okay. Now, the other artery was blocked 30%, is that?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But they didn't stent that?
No, they didn't stent it. They said that the blood flow was quite good.
Right.
And it was good enough for them not to stent it. And basically, I was told to lose the cigarettes. They were my downfall.
Right. And?
I've had wicked struggles with it. I'm struggling badly. I tried the Champax medications, but my GP had to take me off it because it drove my blood pressure up.
Well.
It's not the easiest medication to take.
Right.
It has a lot of side effects. And I had to come off it after a couple of weeks. I was violently sick with headaches and everything, and I came off that, and it didn't help me much. But I'm starting the patches now this week to see if I can start over again.
So it's very tough getting off them, is it?
Oh, yeah.
Even though you know that you have to.
As much as you know it's your downfall, and it is my downfall.
Yeah.
And I know I have to stop.
Yeah. The stress, you lost your daughter Amy in 2014. I can't believe it's 3 years, in fact.
Just gone 3 years now.
And your brother Christopher, when did Christopher...
He died 18 months after, in the May.
Right. So stress has to have played a part.
It would have an awful effect. Yeah. It would have a lot of... I think it would have had a major effect on me.
Right.
I'd been through a whole lot, and I kept pushing myself. I suppose if you don't look after yourself, nobody else, you know.
Right.
You have to look after yourself first.
And the responsibility of the children, while you love them to bits, it is a responsibility.
Oh, it's a big responsibility, you know. Yeah. But thank God I had a lot of support and a lot of help, and I'm getting back on track.
Yeah.
You know?
Amy's little boy, he's having his communion, is he?
He is. He's making his communion on the 19th of May this year now in Lisrona. So
right. That's
another big, big event.
Of course it is. And how are the kids getting on?
They're doing brilliantly, having said that, he has his own issues. He was diagnosed with Asperger's and ADHD.
Was he?
Yeah, right. Just recently.
Right.
But they're great kids. The eldest is 11 and the youngest is 5, and Jaden's 8.
Right, so. But I can see where you felt, even while you were trying to make a recovery yourself, you knew you had to recover for them.
And of course I have my own boys there as well. And I've 15-year-old at home, he's doing his junior cert this year. So there's more pressure there, but...
Yeah.
Not that he'll put too much pressure on himself, mind. But I've a 20-year-old, he's away working in Galway, and I've a 27-year-old, he's married in Clonmel.
Right.
You know, so I've had a lot of support from the boys.
Did you ever go screaming into the room and saying, why me? Why all these crosses, like, for me?
I've often wanted to just get on a bus and just go somewhere, just get away and, you know, just get away from everything.
Yeah.
But I kept asking myself, why me? Like, why now? When I suppose both my parents had heart disease. Do you know, there's major family history there. And I suppose in hindsight, with such a family history, I suppose I should have been looking after things. I should have been checking it more.
Mm.
And I suppose you don't think until it hits you.
Of course you don't.
You know, like, in hindsight is a great thing.
So I presume you'd have advice for people out there who might have a family history of this. No matter how slight they are or whatever.
And get yourself looked after. Get all these checks done and get whatever tests there are to be done. Look after yourself and start looking at what you're eating and drinking and smoking and all that sort of stuff. And exercise is so important.
What I'd be scared about, Anne-Marie, is that you did go and get things checked out, but there were other explanations there, indigestion.
I had numerous ECGs done and they came back normal. And I had blood tests done, they came back normal.
And was there any explanation as to why they would be normal if you had such a profound blockage?
Not really, no. Just that the real only answer to finding out when something like that is to have the angiogram. But it's such an invasive procedure and there's such a waiting list. It's unreal.
Is it very invasive to have an angiogram?
Yeah.
What is involved in having an angiogram?
Well, you have to be awake during the procedure. No matter what, you have to be awake so they can gauge what level of pain you're in. They give you mild sedation, very mild. I think it was 2.5 mil of something on the level of Valium they would inject through the drip here in your arm.
Right.
But they go in through the main artery in the right arm, or they can go in through the groin.
Right.
Sometimes they do.
This is for the angiogram now?
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
But they go in, the wire goes in here and you're looking at the screen, you're actually looking at what they're doing, and you can see the heart and you can see the wire going up into it.
Right.
And they show you everything. You can see and you can gauge it. And then he just turned the screen around and he showed me where the blockage was. And it was 90% in the main left artery.
Right. And was that very painful while that was happening?
Very much so.
Was it?
They do give you medication through the drip for that if you're in too much pain, or they can up the sedation slightly. But you must remain awake during the procedure at all times.
It's absolutely incredible. I didn't realise that that's... was what happened with an angiogram. Yeah. I thought it was a bit like an MRI or something.
Oh, no.
Nothing like that.
No, and on the spot then, they inserted the stent through that wire in straight through on the spot at that moment.
At that moment?
Yeah.
Right.
And when they told me they were doing that, I think that's like the shock hit me. And my friend was with me, and when the nurse pulled the curtain after the procedure was done, I just looked at her and I just burst out crying, because I had told my partner when I was going down that day, actually, I'm just going down for an old test, I'm just getting this angiogram done, so I'll be home this evening. Like, but I knew that if there was a problem, I might not be going home that evening, but I didn't want any of the rest of them to worry about it.
Sure, so, it's no wonder you're making yourself unwell, because you're taking all of this upon yourself. You're taking all of the responsibility of this and the stress of that. Yeah. I don't know. How are you feeling now? How are you feeling now?
Oh, I'm feeling great now.
Are you?
Yeah. I blackguard with the lads, and as they said, oh, geez, you shouldn't be doing that now, Emery. And I'd say, what? Just because I have a dicky ticker, like, you know, then my friend calls it my dicky ticker. But I'm flying it. Like, I do get a little breathless, slightly.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm back to the gym. I started back there last week.
Right.
In the swimming pool there in Clonmel. And I got my discharge from Declan Spellman and that, and I completed that rehab. But I'm actually starting up another rehab tomorrow.
Right.
In Clonmel, another cardiac rehabilitation programme.
Very good. Is that with DJ?
DJ O'Dwyer.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, we wish you the very best. It's always great to see you. We have great admiration for you. I don't know how you've dealt with the amount of stress you have dealt with and the tragedy you've dealt with, but, you know, you have my full admiration. Look after yourself, Anne-Marie. Let us know how you're doing, won't you?
I will, of course.
Thanks very much indeed.